Blog Talk Radio.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Fulfilling my own destiny. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great, big, vast world of ours. You are listening to Purpose Talk Radio, and I am your host, Cindy Freeman, out here in the Midwest. Snow-filled, well, not quite too bad yet, state of Wisconsin. And today we are going to be talking about seeing through different eyes. Today is Friday, December 15th, 2017. Our guests will be Kathy Schneider and Dave Hyde, and I'll put them on in just a few minutes here. But first of all, I'd like to tell you a couple of things about Purpose Talk Radio. We are brought to you on Fridays to talk about living your purpose, whatever that might mean. Our guests talk about themselves as well as topics related to living your purpose, how they came to achieve it, how they came to know it, and maybe a few suggestions of what you can do to find your purpose. We are here noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, and 8 p.m. in the UK. And I know it's not quite every Friday anymore because of school and various things that are happening, because I want to make sure I bring the best topics and the best people to you rather than you just listening to me sometimes. The song that you just heard is called I Am Who I Am by the group True Trinity. The vocalist on it is Jillian Clark. The writers are Jillian, Rachel Grace, and myself. You can find that at truetrinity.com, TRUETRINITY.com. You'll also find the song Be the Difference over there if you'd like to purchase those songs. You can contact me directly if you have a guest or a topic for us at cindy@purposetalkradio.com, C-I-N-D-Y at P-U-R-P-O-S-E-T-A-L-K-R-A-D-I-O.com. Let's see, the show is brought to you by True Visions Travel, a full-service travel company, especially for those needing individualized accommodations. And you can find that at truevisionstravel.com, TRUEVISIONSTRAVEL.com. Any other fun stuff I need to tell you? Of course I do. I need to tell you how you can participate in this show. Now, there are a couple ways to do that. The first would be to, if you are on the show page, you can scroll down into the chat room, which is opening as we speak here. There we go. And it's all the way down to the bottom if you can see it. The other way you can do is call in live at 347-205-9074, 347-205-9074. If you'd like to speak to me directly or to our guests, please do press the number 1 so that I know you are not just listening in the background. And that I do know you want to talk, and we'll take some questions after we do the interview. You also can Skype in, which is next to the phone number on the top of the show page as well. I honestly don't know how well this works for screen readers, for those that might be joining us using screen readers, and I'd love to find out from somebody, because I don't actually need the screen reader. I just magnify my things for myself. So if somebody would let me know that, I would love to find out at some point. Let's see, what else can I tell you here? I think that's pretty much the fun. Oh, yes, whether you're listening to this show live or archived, please do make your comments on Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, that group. You do have to ask to join, but pretty much I let people come on in, and you can make your comments, you can ask questions, The thread for this show is pinned to the top, or will be pinned to the top very shortly. And it stays there until we have the next show. So that should help anybody that's listening to us archived. All right. Now, having said all that, I see we have an extra person on here, and I think I know which two lines I need. So I'm going to bring in our guests here. And they were carrying on a conversation when I put them on hold, so we'll see how that conversation goes along. But basically, the show is just a conversation, so we appreciate anybody who wants to participate with us. Kathy and Dave, welcome to Purpose Talk Radio.
Hey, good to be here.
There we go.
Good to be here as well.
Everything has come on clearly, which is good. So we're all here in Wisconsin, which is pretty cool. I don't have that happen very often where I have multiple guests, and this is probably the first or second time, I think, that I've had multiple guests on my show. So hopefully we can figure out a way to not chat over each other, because I know all of us have very strong opinions and experiences in the topic that we're going to discuss today. So
this time of the year, Cindy, it's going to get cooler the later the year goes.
True. But you know the good part is, after a week from now, the days get to get longer again. Yay! and I will be floating along in Arizona shortly after this. I love it. All right.
Okay.
Well, let's see. I suppose I could introduce you all first, and we'll get right into the main part of our show. I'm not going to do that. I know both of you work in, I guess I want to say governmental, or have worked in governmental type agencies, advocacy agencies. Before I get into the exact details of what those are, anybody that saw the promo for the show has a pretty good idea. But before I get into the specifics of that, I would like to know if there was a specific time in your life that said, this is what I'm going to do and this is why I'm going to do it. Or has it kind of elapsed over time as far as your career is concerned at this point? Kathy, you want to take that first?
Sure. Actually, I've been pretty clear about my purpose in life, but it's changed several times. For example, when I was in high school, I thought I was going to go off and be a physics major and tear up the world of physics. Freshman year in college changed that, and I discovered psychology, and then I went off in that direction and realized that people were just as interesting as atoms or stars, and that helping people grow was going to be what I would do.
Cool. Dave?
I guess I've... Okay, let me go that way. I think that if there is an ultimate purpose for most of us in what we do is that we want to leave things better than we found them. And I think that if you have that as your sort of internal motto, and you guide what you do with that, I think it makes for a successful life. So unlike my friend Kathy, I am still working full-time, lucky her, and I've done a lot of different things. I started out when I was in high school, I thought that I would go my rehab counselor asked me what I wanted to do, I told him I wanted to go into psycho-cybernetics. And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "I don't know. But it sounds interesting." It was a couple of big words. And they said, "Okay, fine. We can't find that in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. So why don't we put down computer programming?" And I said, "Okay, that'll work." And I took my first class in analytical geometry in college, and I had a gentleman, an Arabic gentleman, as a math teacher in analytical geometry. And back then, we didn't have disabled students' offices. So if you wanted accommodations, you made them for yourselves. And, Kathy, I bet you it was that way when you went to college, too.
Indeed.
And so I went to my analytical geometry class, and he was talking about something, and his way of doing class was to write things on the board and then saying, okay, now we multiply this times this and 42 degrees cosine theta, and here is your answer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being basically shy, I asked him, excuse me, sir, but what was the first this? Oh, we talk about it after class. Well, of course, he was always gone after class.
Mm-hmm.
Led me to believe I was not going to be a math major, which you require to do to be a computer programmer, so I went into psychology as well and found that I loved social psych. I loved doing surveys and doing studies and all that kind of thing and dealing with statistics. Stats were easy compared to analytical geometry. So I did that, and when I got out of college, I was looking for a grad course, and I didn't want to go to the University of Oregon down in Eugene, so I went into corrections instead.
Okay.
So I got to work. I went to grad school, and I got bored, and I went off and got a job working in a prison. And they let me out every night. It was nice. But I've always had the attitude that I could get a job whenever I wanted it, and I've always been lucky in that. So I've had a lot of different jobs, done a lot of different things. I've sold insurance door to door. There's a trip for you. I've worked as a technology specialist in a state library in the state of Oregon, where I went around and helped people make their libraries accessible. I've taught at the Colorado Center for the Blind, so I got to start working with blind people and teaching them things.
So how did you figure out what these next steps were, Dave? Was there anything in particular, momentary?
Money was important. Money was always important because I grew up as in what we would now call an economically disadvantaged family. I didn't know that at the time. But every time I was looking for a job, somebody offered me something either with a new challenge or with more money, and I said, okay.
Okay.
So I've been moving east for the last 30 years, and now I work for the Wisconsin Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Wisconsin.
Perfect.
So I've gotten to work with children and adults and convicts.
Okay.
It was easier to, sometimes the convicts were easier.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, since Dave started with some of his history, let me give you a little bit more of it before we get any further into the conversation. So Dave Hyde, as he had said, has been a counselor in a prison, a door-to-door salesman, telephone salesman, library technology specialist, computer instructor, and now works for the Wisconsin Center, as he'd mentioned, for blind and visually impaired. He's been an active member of the National Federation of Blind since 1974, which is where we met, not quite that far ago, though. And has served as an officer on all levels, including state president of the Oregon affiliate and as a national board member. Dave has served on the Oregon Commission for the Blind and has chaired the Wisconsin Statutory Council for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Over years, he's served on several national committees dealing with library service and currently is the co-chair of the National Federation of Blind Library Service Committee. And then Kathy, or Catherine Schneider, PhD, is a retired clinical psychologist, as she's mentioned, living in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and she's been active in disability education throughout her career, has received an award for superior journalism about disability issues through the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at Arizona State University. I missed part of your bio. Let me switch here. God, I apologize for that. I had changed something. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I started an award. I didn't receive it.
Ah, okay. I error on that. I just realized that I had cut it apart. So
well, I remember meeting Kathy, though, working together on some National Library Service committees.
And
Kathy was, we were on the Collection Development Committee together for a few years, and Kathy has had a lot of literary experience. I know her family gives out awards for excellence in children's literature, isn't it, Kathy?
Yeah, I started some awards with the American Library Association for children's books with disability content.
And then I
would have to mention that I've written 3 books.
Right.
Well, you're 3 books ahead of me.
There you go.
You got at least 3 books in you, Dave.
I understand that. I think a lot of us succeed. We all succeed in different ways. You know, if I've got a literary question or I'm looking for children's books with good disability characters in them, Kathy is one of the best sources there is, because she not only writes them, she reads a lot of them and helps to award the best ones. And having worked with her, I have a good deal of faith in her judgment. So, you know, once in a while I'll get a parent who's looking for such things, and I'll say, well, you know, here's the person's website you want to go look at, because she's got, she's got more background in that area than I do. I get to work with teachers of blind kids now, so I get to make a lot of those kinds of referrals. Now, Kathy, you also are a...
Let's go through what I've got here yet, and then we'll let you guys chat about some of your experiences in that. So as was said, Kathy's published 3 different books right now, a memoir called To the Left of Inspiration, Adventures in Living with Disabilities, a children's book called Your Treasure Hunt, Disabilities and Finding Your Gold, and a book for seniors, of course, half of which whom will eventually develop disabilities one way or the other, called Occupying Aging, Delights, Disabilities, and Daily Life. Those are mouthfuls, Kathy, I got to tell you. but they're very telling of some of the stuff that you do. And then she originated the Schneider Family Book Awards for children's books with disability content for the American Library Association. We already talked about the award, and then locally she started the Access Eau Claire Fund through the Eau Claire Community Foundation to help nonprofit organizations work toward full inclusion of people with disabilities. Of course, she's a passionate advocate for access for all to good things in life. And she tells us directly that she doesn't see with her eyes, but rather through her other senses and her seeing eye dog. So that should pretty much wrap up the basic information for you folks. We can go forward from that. Because what we want to talk about kind of is, you know, vision. I was going to put this off about the vision stuff, but we've already touched on it, so we're probably going to end up going right into it. Originally, I wanted to have these folks on during what's called Meet the Blind Month or Blind Awareness Month, which is in October. But things being what they are, life changes, and we've rescheduled it a couple of times, and here we are today. So it never matters when you know, we bring up the topics on this show, which is great. It's always awareness and understanding, which is what the main process of this. So there are no, and I know both of you agree with this, there are no foolish questions. If somebody has a question about something, please make sure you call in and we can discuss it. You know, and just what I wanted are questions of understanding. So, acceptable from both of you on that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't know. I bet Dave can come up with a foolish question.
Oh, that's right. That before my guess.
He's a joker.
We spent too much time together on things, Kathy. You know me too well. Now, one of the interesting things, you know, and we started out, like you say, doing this as part of Meet the Blind Month and White Cane and things like that. I get, you know, Kathy and I have gone two different directions as far as travel. I was once a dog user. Now I use a cane. And Kathy, you're on how many dogs have you had now?
I'm working with my ninth guide dog.
Guide dog. So we learned to, you know, I learned to travel with a cane. I'm sure Kathy, you did too.
Yes.
And I had one dog guide and decided that I didn't want to go through the trauma of getting another one because I got very attached to her. And
that is one of the hard parts.
I tell people that nobody cries when you break a cane. Mm-hmm. But on this, by the same token, there, if you ever get a chance to watch a good dog handler and dog work, you'll appreciate why people like them, particularly this time of the year. There, Kathy, do you go shopping this time of year with your dog?
Unfortunately, yes. Too many people out there, but you bet. And the dog will get you through, whether it's snow, ice, or crowds.
Particularly crowds. I loved that follow command around Christmas because I could just point at the person shopping with me and I could say follow, and you'd turn every which direction, but they would dodge all of those talking obstacles. And she was, that is the best thing to me about dog guides. And that is something you can't do with a cane.
I enjoy the teamwork part of it because it's another thinking human being. And sometimes they come up with solutions that I never would have thought of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also tell students who ask me about dog guides that they have to be, it's not something you can do casually. A dog guide is a commitment. And, you know, if you go into it and say, well, I can work with it, you know, this week, and then I may work with her next week. No, it's got to be you've got to commit yourself to making that tool work for you. A cane will stand in the corner. A dog guide won't. What did you do? I had somebody ask me the other day about dog guides and ice and snow. Do you get more ice and snow up there than we do down here? How do you change techniques during the ice and snow?
I've taught my dogs, and some of them have just naturally learned slow down when it's icy, and they all take it really personally if I do some ice dancing and end up on my rear. It may not be their fault, but each one of them has been concerned, so they will do their best to slow down if they have to, or But they'll get you through even if it hasn't been shoveled. I remember that about canes, where you'd go out and poke around looking for the sidewalk, and that is more convenient with a dog.
Yes, although I've gotten used to traveling with a cane in snow, and in Oregon, we never got a lot of snow. I learned how to do that very quickly after I moved to Colorado. And, of course, here, you know, Colorado, you get snow and it goes away in a couple of days. Here, they want to keep it. So, and have you used all breeds of dogs, or do you have one particular breed that you favor?
I've had Labs and Golden Retriever and some Lab Golden Cross. I've never worked with a Shepherd because I work with a lot of different people. They thought they should give me a dog that was at least perceived as being friendlier than a Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. And my girl was a Lab, and of course, you know, a Lab is the rest of the Lab is just an excuse for the tail. And if that tail wasn't waving when you started working, you better take the dog home and use a cane, because it was going to be a real bad day.
So let's do this. When you're Dave, I'm going to get into the difference on the canes in a second, because I know people are not necessarily aware of some of them. I want to go back to the dog since you're talking about that. How do you train with a dog? How do you pick a dog? And let's do a little bit of dog etiquette for someone who may just be listening to this and is aware that there are service animals out there. And this is going to be a general statement for all service animals, not just with the blind, because it's all the same case. So,
well, I'll take it and you fill in, Dave.
Real good.
A service animal is individually trained to work with a person with a disability. A therapy animal is a nice, well-trained pooch that anybody could take into an environment to be nice to people with disabilities, or to read with kids, or to comfort students during finals week or whatever. So service dog, individually trained for one person with disabilities. Service dogs have legal rights. When you take that animal into an environment, somebody can ask you, is it a trained service dog? And they can ask you, what is it trained to do? Tell me a couple tasks. They cannot say, what's wrong with you? But they can say, tell me a couple tasks it can do. And then within service dogs, guide dog is a dog for blind people. They are not called blind dogs, although if they are, then there's a problem there. Then within guide dogs, there are about 10 schools in the country that train guide dogs, and the one that's closest here would be the Leader Dog in Rochester, Michigan. I get my dogs from the Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey. By the time you get the dog, they've lived with a family for a year to 14 months. They've learned basic social graces. Then they go back to school and have 3 or 4 months of training in how to guide. Then you get matched with them at the school, have 3 or 4 weeks of training. Then you bring it home and train it for your own needs. The biggest difference from a pet dog is that guide dogs need to be able to be intelligently disobedient, which means if you get ready to cross the street and you say forward and it isn't safe, the dog doesn't go, even if you get pretty grouchy about it and say forward. It still don't go, and that's the difference between that and a well-trained pet dog.
Yes, and the other thing, part about that training is that you have to learn as a handler to pay attention to the dog, and sometimes the dog is right. I'm a stubborn person. I had a very good dog.
That's why you got a Lab, because they're stubborn too.
And I remember I was going to a place, and I came to the curb, and I said, forward, and the dog just stood there. I said, forward, and did a little bit of a leash correction, not a hard one. And she stood there and said, damn it, I want to go. And I stepped off. It was the edge of a loading dock. Dog's up there looking down saying, told you so, told you so, told you so. And, of course, you don't discipline the dog. It was entirely my fault. And she says, I'm concerned about you, you know, but you know what? I did what I was supposed to do. It's your fault. Yes, it was. There is another method of getting a dog guide, and I use dog guides because as opposed to guide dog, and I'll tell you, first of all, I'm old, and I remember when schools were fighting about the use of their names. And there is a Seeing Eye dog school called Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey. That's a trademarked name. There is a Guide Dogs for the Blind Incorporated in San Rafael, California, and Boring, Oregon. And if you've ever been there, it is. So I call them dog guides, and that covers guide dogs and Seeing Eye and pilot dogs and leader dogs and guide dogs of the desert and guiding eyes of New York State and all of those. In Wisconsin, we do have two places that train dog guides, and they come to your home and train with you with them. And there is one in Milwaukee called Occupaws, and they train a number of different kinds, including poodles, by the way. And then there is Canine Companions in Madison, Wisconsin, that trains, I know they train dog guides, and I believe they also train other kinds of therapy dogs. And I've seen good products out of both schools. So those are some local options. Now, as far as working with dogs, as I said earlier, it is a commitment, and that means that you have to keep the dog in training. Kathy, you talked about training the dog after you got home. That's essential. Yes, the school gives it a lot of the skills it's going to need. It's going to teach the dog to stop at curbs, turn left or right on command, go around obstacles. It's going to train it to follow people that you point out to it. It's supposed to be trained not to get food off of tables. Sometimes they forget that training, and you have to reinforce it. But if you have, and they've added escalators. When I got my first dog, they told us that dogs should never go on escalators. So if you wanted your dog to do escalators, you had to train that yourself. But you're always training that dog, and you're always keeping that training sharp. So I tell students that if they're in a hurry and their dog makes a mistake, it doesn't matter that you're in a hurry. You go back and you rework that situation until the dog gets it right. And then you praise the dog and you go back and rework it again. And then you praise the dog and you go back and rework it again. Because you want to reinforce the correct way of doing things. And that's one of those commitments that they don't often talk about when they say, yes, let's get a dog, because they used to tell us to get dogs if our travel skills weren't too well, if you didn't use a cane well. They do travel differently from the use of a cane, but a lot of those skills are transferable. I tell students a dog is an excellent tool for good point-to-point work. If you know where you're going, a dog is terrific. If you're exploring and trying to find things, you sometimes get a very frustrated dog. Would you agree with me, Kathy?
Yeah, I think that's a good differentiation there. Cindy also said talk about etiquette, so let me bring up etiquette around a service animal of any kind. if you're one of those people that just has to touch it, the deal is come and ask and then abide by whatever that person says. If they say, please don't, then that means please don't. If they say, fine, let me put it at rest, then fine. But the best advice is ask, and the best thing to tell your kids is about any dog is
right.
Go ask the owner before you touch it.
And
yes.
Now, if you're walking with the dogs and you see the harnesses and you see the, I forgot what it's called. The part that says a service dog. Sometimes it's on it. Sometimes it's on the harness. Sometimes it's on like a cape.
Sometimes many of us don't have a sign on the dog.
Okay.
First of all, any dog at all that you see walking down the street, don't go up and pet it.
True.
Ever. Now, if you want to pet the dog, ask or let the dog come up and choose to get petted, any dog. Service dogs, always ask. Now, there's another end to that etiquette, and this is something that some people feel badly about doing, or maybe I shouldn't say something, or maybe they'll be upset. Look, if you see somebody's service animal who is doing things that it should not do, example, I was at a dinner once with a friend with a service dog, and somebody came up to him and said, did you know that your dog just stole a donut right off the table? No, he didn't know that. Now, if the dog is supposed to be at rest and he comes over and decides that your lap is where he wants his head and he sneaks over there to do it, rat him out. Tell the handler. Because these dogs are supposed to behave, particularly in harness. And if you're not sure if the dog is supposed to be doing something, ask the handler, ask the person using it. Because sometimes, and labs are good at this, they'll get real sneaky about food. So will other dogs, and so will children. But still, you want that dog to be an asset to you and not a hindrance in social situations. And taking food off tables is not what you want your dog to do.
I was told back in your talking to the training, I was told that if I wanted to get a dog, that I had to make sure I was capable of traveling with a cane and pretty proficient at it. Because there, the animal gets sick, the animal has to go to the vet, you just never know, and then there needs to be that backup. You can carry the cane with, you don't use the cane at the same time, you carry the cane with, because you just never know what might happen in the process. I don't know. It sounded like
it's always good to have a backup. I always carry a spare cane.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that because I have been in situations where I needed it. I remember taking students to Chicago, and we got off the train. We were walking down Michigan Avenue, and there were some teenagers there that thought that the cane would make a great thing to play jump the pole with.
Mm.
And so one of them would run up and jump over the cane, and the next one would come up and jump over the cane. And I was ignoring them the best I could, and one of them didn't jump too well. And all of a sudden I had two halves of a cane. Oh, my goodness, I'm sorry. Well, no, you're not really that sorry. You were jumping the cane, and you knew you were doing it, so I basically told the kid, no, you can keep the cane, reached in my backpack, got the other one, and kept going. If your dog...
Okay, go ahead. If you're going to jump back to the dog, I'll go back to your cane in a minute.
I was
so
going
go
back. And there are going to be some situations where you're going to want a cane even if you have a dog. Yeah, you know, the dog is having a bad... Good example. My old girl, Ginger, she was about 8 or 9 years old, and I was at an NFB state convention, and being the president, I was at a dead run from about 6 o'clock in the morning, and this was about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And she got tired, and she said, fine, look, I'm done. I'm worn out. I'm taking a nap. And she laid down in the middle of the hall. You know, basically, it was, look, you want to go, you want to keep doing, that's fine, but I've had it for the day. Go find another mode of travel. That's why I loved her so much. You know, she had those, she knew when she was done. So, you know, I had to put her in the room, and she found one of the beds. She liked to sleep on beds when she'd get away with it. And I had to keep running around using a cane. There's always situations where you're going to find a cane useful, and it doesn't hurt you to carry one just in case.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't think so. I encourage people to do it.
So, and
Kathy?
Then the other thing.
Okay.
People think that, you know, a service animal is 24/7 work and all this other stuff. The dog gets to play and gets to be a dog at other times, correct? It's not, you know,
absolutely.
Gets to be a dog too.
Tonight I'm going over to a friend's house to play bridge. They have a fenced backyard. My dog will get some time out in the fresh snow, just running as hard as she can around that fenced yard.
Yeah, I tried to make mine a 24/7 working animal, and that worked until my wife and I got together. And she had a whole different idea. She was happy to see the girl work, but after the harness came off, it was a dog. And this was one of her favorite times of year, because Nancy would bake. Back then you used a pan with a lid and oil to pop popcorn.
Yep.
And Nancy would make a bowl of popcorn, and we'd eat it, and every once in a while she'd toss a kernel out into the middle of the room, and the dog would jump straight up and catch it. And Ginger just thought that was the absolute most fun there was. You know, I'm not in harness. She would never do anything like that in harness. But off the harness, this was a dog, and a lab, of course, loves water. And this she liked even in harness. If there was a mud puddle, I went through it. oh, boy, water, splash, 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 splash. Thanks a lot, dog. Now, Kathy, do you carry a cane around with you, or do you not?
I don't.
Okay.
Probably be a good idea, because, like you said, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
My last collapsible cane collapsed, so I need to get a new one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. They die.
Well, it's good for those who have the visual impairments. You know, they do get to get a free cane every 2 years, as was recently shared with some of us on a particular Google group.
Yeah.
So,
the Wisconsin Council gives out a free cane every 2 years. Now, they carry a limited number of cane types.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what every business makes a decision on what they carry.
Right.
So you can get today everything from the old aluminum heavy, I think they're heavy canes, up to carbon fiber canes, which are light and, you know, that's what I've gone to most of the time. You can get canes that are straight, that mean that don't fold or anything like that. You can get ones that fold. You can get them that telescope. And, of course, there's a myriad of different kinds of tips, and it depends upon, you know, what you want that cane to do. If you're going to use it as a support cane, I would not suggest a telescoping cane.
Yeah,
it's not going to work. In fact, I don't suggest using a blindness-related cane as a support cane anyway, because that's not what they're designed for, and they don't give you as much support as some people who, some elderly people or people with other disabilities need.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that means you have a cane in both hands, and that's not always comfortable, but sometimes it's necessary. I need to change to my speakerphone here because my headset is dying.
Okay.
There we go. Now, as far as, do we want to go to the, do we want to talk about blind people, dogs and canes and drivers? Where do we want to go here, Cindy?
I kind of want to, the next thing, I mean, we talked about the dog etiquette. I want to talk a little bit about the canes and the various canes, just because, you know, we know here in Wisconsin, or here in Milwaukee, there was, have been at least two blind pedestrian-related accidents, and it's not for, you know, someone with a cane not stopping at the curb and listening to traffic. It's unfortunately in both cases been someone turning and not realizing someone was there. So it's not necessarily blind-related. It's pedestrian-related. But I think to awaken people a little more that they do need to be aware of folks that may not be able to see them for whatever reason, and that it's no longer just a red tip or a red cane issue, which it used to be. You know, they can be identified with green. They can be, like you said, the straight canes. They can be everything else. So
okay.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Okay. I'll start, and then Kathy, you jump in, because otherwise I'll talk all the time. And you, I know that you can hold your own. Back in the mid-60s, actually in Wisconsin it was in the 50s, the original White Cane Law was passed. And the White Cane Law did several things. One, it said that, very importantly, blind people and people with visual impairments have the right to walk on the streets, to go into businesses, and to do normal things on their own. Now, today we take that for granted. Back in the 50s, that wasn't taken for granted. In fact, there were a number of cases around the country where a blind person might have gotten hit by a car, and because that blind person was out on his or her own, the court said they were negligent, they were at fault for being alone, that they had no business being alone because they were blind, and therefore the cause of the accident was their blindness. Negligent means you were careless. You were wrong in doing something. If your landlord leaves, if you own a house and your landlord decides to take the steps away and you walk out and fall off the porch, your landlord is negligent. So one of the basic things the White Cane Law did was say directly that a blind person being on his or her own is not negligence. So if a car hits you, they can't say, well, yeah, but if he had been able to see, he wouldn't have been in the way. That doesn't count. And that particular piece of legislation made it possible for us as blind and visually impaired people to do a lot of things other than just walk. Back then, frequently you were turned away from a hotel because you were blind. If you went to get on a train, they might say, well, who's with you? Well, if you don't have anybody with you, you can't ride because you're blind. So blindness in many situations was considered not only negligent, but incompetence. So the White Cane Law, and it did a couple of things. It dealt with that. It said that a blind person traveling with, and here's the other part, or without a cane, can travel. And they defined canes in various states, various ways. Here was a white cane with a red tip. Now it's just a white cane with or without a red tip. In Oregon, by the way, they had three classifications of canes. There was a white cane with a red tip, and that designated a person who was blind. You could have a white cane without a red tip, or you could have a white cane with a chartreuse tip, and that designated that you were deafblind. So what the law says is this. If you see a person crossing a street with a white cane, you're supposed to stop at least 10 feet away.
And actually now it's been amended to include or dog guide.
Or dog guide, yes. If you don't, you're subject to a fine of like $100. I don't think it's ever enforced. I cannot find a court case in Wisconsin where somebody was prosecuted under the White Cane Law. I know a lot of people who got warnings, but nobody that I have seen at least in the last 20 years or so has taken it to court. Secondly, it says that the blind person always has the right of way. Okay, now that's nice, but it's a clause without a purpose because the pedestrian always has the right of way. You can't have the right of way twice. And, of course, there's no law that says you have to, there's no law that says that you can't turn right behind the blind person. It happens to me every day. Or if you're not fast enough, sometimes they're going to turn right in front of you. Right turn on red is a good example. My rule as far as travel, White Cane Law or not, is never trust a driver. I say that having had some experience. I've lost count of the number of times that cars have run stop lights and stop signs, and I don't even trust them in their driveway because I've had them try to back into me. And I know of at least one case here in Janesville where a person was backed into by a car, and the woman said, well, gee, I didn't see you. And of course, you don't see you, but you're not looking out the back of the car. We're at a point with our White Cane Laws where we're going to have to do some changes. Recently, regulations were passed
by the Department of Transportation in Washington that require that quiet vehicles, electric vehicles, make some noise. That's good, because that's the only way you can tell one's coming. Now, Kathy, your guide dog will react to vehicles that you can't hear, correct?
That's right. But, yeah, I'm all for them making noise, because I'm a cautious person and I like two forms of knowing what's going on, paying attention to what my dog and also my own ears, and I'm glad that they have to make noise.
Remember that
I think both you and I are pretty able. We're obviously lived a few years and gotten around doing whatever we do, so we're alive. But I think for people who are elderly and go blind and all, the more helpful drivers can be, and the more things that help people keep out there navigating, the better.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, when I did the cane training, it's funny because my hearing has been, my whole life has been super astute. I go out and I was under sleep shades and learning to travel with the cane, and I swear I was directionally impaired. I could not tell from what direction things were coming real easily. It got really strange. So I can understand that as someone, you know, fairly new, as they're losing their eyesight, you know, may experience some of those same things. And even those that have done as well, they don't rely on that sense of hearing much to get around. You know, maybe they've had somebody with them. Maybe they're first moving out on their own. You know, or maybe moving into a different community living situation of a, you know, assisted living or whatever. You know, they may have to relearn some of those skills.
And there is nothing wrong. I want to. There was a time, and as Cindy, as you said, I've been active in the NFB for around 40 years or so. So, and I've had an opportunity to watch the organization change a great deal. There was a time when if you didn't do things a certain way, a lot of us who were NFB members kind of looked down on you. You didn't use a cane properly. You didn't. There was a time we didn't, that a lot of our members felt we didn't like dog guides because they weren't canes. I've watched that change over 40 years. I think I would say now that the organization, and I think of it this way, if the technique works, you use it. So, yes, there are going to be people who are never going to master cane travel. Mm-hmm. They're going to use sighted guide. If that works for you, good.
Mm-hmm.
If there are going to be people who are going to be afraid to cross a street forever, no matter what you do, they're going to need help. That's okay. What we want people to do, or what I would like people to do, would be at least to give things a try. If you find that you can't do them, well and good. But if you never try, you'll never succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who knows? You might discover that you can do things. What we need in Wisconsin is we need more trainers. You know, if you live in Madison or Milwaukee, you're okay. You've got the Wisconsin Council in Madison. You've got Vision Forward in Milwaukee. But that's only two places in the state that can give you any kind of a concentrated training.
Right.
Kathy has had concentrated training, and it's only taken Actually, we both had concentrated trading, and we concentrated on it for about, what, 60 years?
And I bet there's still days where you say, where you wonder if you've been traveling the way you have at all, right?
Oh,
well, when they invented roundabouts, and I needed to figure out how you're going to do a roundabout. That, you know, you keep learning. And basically, if people are curious about how blind people do roundabouts, you wait till it's quiet and then you run like hell.
Yeah, pretty much.
Would you agree with that technique, David?
I would, because there's no traffic control generally on the in, and very little on the out. And I have I've actually done my very best to avoid them.
Yes.
And it was the same way, by the way, when I got to Colorado, and they had crossings with islands. We didn't have crossings with islands in Oregon. And I had to figure out how to use them. You know, you do the first part, then you do the second part. Okay, that makes sense. But again, there's nothing wrong with asking for help if you need it. And there are going to be times when every blind person is going to need help with something. Just like every other person in the world is going to need help with something.
And I'd like to reframe that to, you got two hands, one to reach out and help, one to reach out and be helped, and they're both good.
Okay. I'll go with that. Except one of your hands has a tail. But, you know, there's
the tail
nothing...
likes to be helpful, too.
Yeah, I know.
Cleaning up popcorn.
Cleaning up popcorn.
Service animal, like... you betcha.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One thing that my dog would beg for was saltwater taffy.
Ooh.
Wow. Oh, good luck. Yep. I want to make sure there's not the chocolate ones.
No, not the chocolate ones, but we didn't know about chocolate back then, you know.
Oh, okay.
There, and, you know, she only lived till about 16 or so, so I don't think it hurt her that badly.
Oh, there you go.
Let's see, where do we want
to... Yeah, exactly. I just want to go from here. Do you want to go on... Okay, you mentioned people asking for help and getting help and all that. I know, again, there's, I don't know what you want people to really know, I guess, is where we're at. You both use different, quote-unquote, eyes. I know there's people that want to go out there and see, they see a blind person, they run up and grab them by the arm, and some people get really frustrated, and some are okay with it, and then others, well, if they don't like it, then why should I help at all? And you know, and there's all kinds of folks out there, like you said, on either side of the spectrum, both with the blindness and those that think they want to be helpful to someone who is blind or vision impaired. Does it really matter?
My take on that is, if you want to be helpful, come on up and say, may I help you? And then I'm in charge, and I can say yes, please, or I can say no, thank you.
Right.
So it's just like petting a dog. Come up and ask. Because if you just are looking at me, unless you've had a lot of garlic at noon, I don't know that you're there.
Right.
So taking the risk of coming up and saying, may I help? Now, if you get your head bit off, okay, that person was having a bad day. And blind people have them, sighted people have them. That's no excuse, but...
I agree. And the other part of it, by all means, there is nothing wrong with asking. Please ask. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think somebody needs help, whoever it is, ask. Don't assume that you are going to help them whether they want help or not. I remember... as a kid, I was in downtown Salem, Oregon, and I was waiting for a friend on a corner. And this lady comes in, here, I'll help you, and grabs me and drags me across the street.
Uh-huh.
And I said, thank you, and waited for the traffic and went back across the street. And she came back across and said, but I got you across the street. And I said, you absolutely did. I didn't want to cross the street. But you helped me cross the street. Thank you so much. Well, I didn't mean, I said, I know you didn't mean it, but the bottom line is you didn't ask me.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you are the first, second, third, maybe the fourth or fifth person that decides I want help and grabs me by something, sometimes it's my arm, sometimes it's my shoulder, sometimes it's the back of my neck, to push me, pull me, or drag me somewhere, I might be nice. I don't guarantee anything after the fourth one, however. Because if you're the fifth or sixth one that decides that I want help in O'Hare Airport and I'm running for a flight and I know where I'm going, I'm probably not going to be real kind.
All right.
And I apologize for that in advance, but I'm not going to be kind. Escalators. I love escalators. Escalators are where you find the people who've got to help. Last time I went out of Midway, you go down, you come in, you go down the escalator to the gates, and so on. Okay, great. I'm headed down there. The escalator's making noise, easy to find. I go to step on it, and I've got a very nice lady who reaches out and grabs me with both arms and says, you are about to go on the escalator. I said, yes, I was. Well, you might fall. And I said, well, you know, by grabbing me like that, you could have ensured that I would fall.
Uh-huh.
Remember, everybody has personal space. And you violate that at your own risk. I want people to understand that I don't reach out to grab people. If I hear them fall, I will get in the way to try to break their fall. But I'm not going to just reach out and grab people randomly. And I wish we all wish that people wouldn't do that for us. Other courtesy things. This is the time of year when people of faith want to demonstrate their faith and affirm their faith, and that's a wonderful thing. Personal space applies to religion as well. That's a kind way of saying, you know, if I wanted healed, I would go to somebody who does healing. Please don't try to do it ad hoc on the street. If you want to pray for me, please do it. You can do it quietly. You can even do it without telling me about it. It's okay. I forget where.
I thought you were going to start into, when you said it's this time of year, I thought you were going to start into, please shovel your walks.
Well, I could go that too.
And while you're shoveling your walks, you could pray for anybody.
Yeah, this is
so true. You could combine.
I can't go there. I'm on the radio. shoveling walks, yes, please shovel your walks.
You know what? I need to use my cane because people don't shovel their walks. So there you go for that, because that's what I can't see. Hello, you know.
I guess, you know, if there is a theme to what Kathy and I have been doing for this broadcast, it would be, first, like we said to begin with, there are no wrong questions. Secondly, it's okay to try anything, and failure is okay. You know, Kathy, I know you've never failed at anything. Everybody has tried things that didn't succeed, and that's okay. You learn as much from what you can't learn, you can't do, is and what you can do. I found
Shouldn't
a lot of things.
Shouldn't you ask us for an affirmation? What was yours, Dave?
An affirmation. For me, I guess my affirmation is make a difference, make things better. That's what keeps me going.
And mine was similar. I said, show up.
Show up, yeah. I think it was different when we were young. Now that we have survived this long, it is a wonderful thing to be able to see what some of the people that we've met have done. And it's interesting that a lot of the things that they thought were really significant that we did, we don't remember doing. It's always the little things that make the biggest difference. And I say that one of my favorite former students has decided now to go out on his own. Quinn Haverill was a student here at the School for the Blind, and he and I did some things together. And he went off, went to college, didn't do well, went to Blind Inc. and got training. He decided he wanted to teach travel. He's taught travel up there now for about 3 or 4 years, and now he's decided that he passed his national certification. Now he's going to go and do his own business and go out and sell his skills and contract to teach cane travel to blind people around the country.
That's what he's going to do.
And he said to me last year at the convention, he said, you know, there were a few people like you who believed in me, and no matter how badly I screwed up, you'd support me and say, okay, well, what are you going to try next? And he said, you know, now I'm doing that to other people, and it still works. So, you know, I want to leave things better than I found them. And things have changed so much since I was a kid, and so many more opportunities. And, you know, it might be fun to go back and be a kid again with all the opportunities kids have today. But I don't think that'll happen this lifetime. Kathy, how about you? Because we're running up on the quarter after point.
I'd like to leave people with the idea of finding their pearls. And if you remember the oyster, a grain of sand, something irritates the oyster, and eventually there may be a pearl. For me, taking situations that are irritating me somehow, and what good can eventually come out of this. Nobody else can give them to you. They can't say, well, Kathy Schneider finds this pearl. Fine, that's Kathy Schneider's pearl. You got to find your own. And for me, one of the big pearls has been the humorous things that happen, partially because of my blindness, that I couldn't make some of that stuff up. And that's sure, it's frustrating sometimes, but it's also wonderful sometimes.
We could probably do a whole show on that. But you and I have about the same number of stories. Cindy, I know you have been able to get a word in here. I'm sorry about that. Do we have anybody who is who has called in or done anything on the chat, or should we have been more?
There is one guest in the chat that has not made any comment at this point. If there is a question you want to ask, please do go ahead and type it in there. There is one person on the phone line that is appears to be just listening. If she wants to talk, she said she'd hit number one, so I will give that opportunity now again. Anybody else, please call in 347-205-9074, again, 347-205-9074. If you're on Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, you can type questions there, too. I'm floating back and forth between the three screens. So let us know if there's any questions, comments, areas that are of interest to you at this point. Aha, yes, we will. The one person on the phone line is named Renee. Apparently she is familiar to both of you. And I will bring her on the that's okay with you guys. For both of you. Unless there was any other comment you want.
Absolutely. She's from my neck of the woods.
There you go.
I probably know her.
That's right.
Hey, Renee.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Renee.
Cindy. And Dave. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I met you down at the state convention, I think, in April last year, NXB. I'm going to go again this year, so yay.
Well, good.
It was good, interesting information. And I wanted to just say maybe a couple other things. Some people, they're always like, oh, you're so amazing. And some people, when you tell them you have eye disease, they, like, back away because they think you're contagious or something. It's like, we're not contagious, and we're not, I mean, it might seem like we're amazing, but we're just trying to do the same things everyone else is doing. You know, we just have to do it differently. And sometimes, like you said, it's frustrating, and it's we have to do it differently, and it takes longer, but it's all really good. So, yeah, learning is great. And, I guess that's all
you
I have to say.
You only walk on water when it's below 32 degrees, right?
Yeah. Right. No, me, my guide Nog and I draw the line at 10 below zero. it's like, I'm not going to, you know, we go on a quick little jaunt. But then she has learned to, of the ice patches, she'll slow down and, of the ice patches, which is really cool because she was from GDV in Boring, Oregon, Dave. And so she's pretty awesome. She's my first guide dog. And I know you have a lot more experience than I do. I've been blind and visually impaired for the last 12 years, and I'm in my 50s. And but you guys have a little more experience than I do. But it's an interesting journey, that's for sure. So, and there's so much technology out there that it's a good time, I guess, to have it happen if it's going to happen. I can't imagine how it was back in the day. It was hundreds of times harder, I'm sure. So, yes. I guess that's all I have to say. You guys have a great holiday, and I'll sign. How do I hit one again?
I'll put you back. Yeah, I'll put you back on hold, and that's fine.
Okay.
Dave or Kathy, any response back to that?
I think she said it pretty well. There are people who think that if you can actually walk and talk at the same time, you are amazing. And that goes, and that speaks to the kinds of expectations people have. One of the biggest problems we have as blind and visually impaired people, and this is all of us as a group, is that a lot of people have low expectations of what you can do. I see it in schools with children. I see it in blind adults, and I see it in blind seniors. People work this way. They say, well, if I couldn't see, I don't know how I would, and you can fill in just about anything at all. And the problem is that if they believe they can't, if they can't conceive it, they don't understand it, and therefore it can't happen. I don't know how I would function as a sighted person. If I could see, I would have to learn how to read all over again. I'd have to learn how to drive one of those metal things that turn in front of me every day. I'd have to learn to identify signs as they whiz by me on the freeway. If anybody is interested in such things and how such things work, I have a book to recommend, and it's by a fellow by the name of Mike May. Mike pretty much got GPS started, not just for blind people, but for everybody else, too. He now is the director of the Seattle Lighthouse. But Mike May did a book years ago called Crashing Through. And what he did is he got implanted with a camera that was supposed to help him to see. And he talks a great deal about having to learn how to do it. And I found it absolutely fascinating. Everybody writes books about what they did when they went blind. He's the only guy I know who's written a book on what he was able and not able to do when he learned to see.
You've given me an idea, Dave.
You want to talk to Mike?
I'll talk to Mike, but one of the things that I've said, and I've said on this show, you know, when I had the legal blindness and then I went to growing up nearsighted my whole life, and then going from blind back to seeing, but seeing the world reversed almost because it was distance vision and no close up. I get it.
Cindy, I've got a better candidate for you.
Okay.
I've got just the person you want.
Yeah.
So talk to me another time. But this guy's gone through it 3 or 4 times.
But yeah, just like you said, the difference. And, you know, people say, well, you know, wouldn't you want the surgery if you could have it? A lot of blind people say no. A lot of deaf people say the same thing. No, because you've learned to make your life what it is and what you want it to be based on the way your life is, period. You know, you don't say it's a disability. You don't say, you know, some people may claim it as a disability and say yes. But in general, people say, I've learned to live with it. It's now what I use. I use the abilities I have and not worry about what I can't do.
Kathy, any, what do you think?
You work with all kinds of disabilities and advocate for them, Kathy, right?
I do. In retirement, I've had the opportunity to join boards and be active. And for example, the internet neutrality it's a big issue for both blind and deaf people because oftentimes we rely very heavily on the internet and on as quick access as anybody else would get. So I've had the opportunity to learn from and advocate for the needs of people with lots of different disabilities.
And I've done it differently. I have stuck, because I know it best, I've stuck pretty much to advocating for people who are blind or visually impaired. It doesn't mean that I won't help anybody else, but I'm more comfortable with issues that I know and I can speak to directly. A lot of what we do impacts other disabilities as well, particularly if you have to take things to court or if you have to pass legislation, it it has an impact. So, for example, when a lot of our affiliates went to work on allowing people who are blind or visually impaired to serve on juries, this is back in the 70s, it was fascinating that your lawyer and your judge could be blind, but you couldn't be a juror, because laws said that you had to be in, quote, full possession of all normal physical and mental faculties, unquote. And I remember sitting in a hearing with that to pass the right to blind people to serve on juries, and some legislators said, wait a minute, if we do this for blind people, then we're going to have to do it for deaf people, and then we're going to have to do it for people in wheelchairs. Why don't we just do it all at once? Okay, that makes sense. So that's what got passed. It's that people with disabilities could not be arbitrarily excluded from serving on civil and criminal juries. And we're no longer in a vacuum. Things just used to affect one, you know, you'd have something that affect one disability, not the other. And we're too interwoven these days. So, you know, I don't think there are, there's still some issues that affect just one, but not as many as there were. So.
That makes sense.
We're all in this together.
Yep. Yep.
And if I fight for you today, maybe you'll fight for me tomorrow.
Well, that's exactly right. And we do. You know, it used to be that you didn't look too hard at all the ramifications of things. And now we're so intertwined. There aren't that many people who are only blind. There are people who are blind and have other disabilities, and those folks are more active than they ever were. And that's exciting. It's changed the way those of us who are only blind look at things. And I think it's made us better, because we have better understanding now of what other people are going through. It didn't used to be that way. So
I've got a pet peeve or a request that I'd like to put out there to people who are listening and say they'd like to do something. Okay. Next time you post a picture on Facebook, please also post a short description, as in, wow, look at this sunset, as opposed to, wow, look at this. Because if you at least say sunset, I know what you're happy about. And that makes me happy. So it's a little thing, but it helps.
I like to know what's in the picture, too. So if you can give it a little bit more description, Amy Snow, who works here at the school, likes to post pictures, and generally they're pictures of cats. So she puts, you know, some information in there about what the cats are doing, and that's helpful. And remember that if you're going to watch Star Wars, The Last Jedi tonight, a lot of theaters now have audio description. I'm not going to, but I'm glad somebody is.
No, good point.
Well, I'm off to play bridge, so.
And I've got to go to a informal school get-together following work today.
Perfect.
But Cindy, if you get questions during the week.
Yeah, I was just as guilty on putting the picture up of the show. You're right, and I appreciate that reminder, because I think of it on my website. When I build the websites to put the alternate text in there. And that's exactly what that's for. But I don't think about doing it on Facebook. That's a good point, because I do have a lot of blind and visually impaired friends on here. So thank you for that reminder.
All right. Well, Cindy, it has been delightful working with you. I hope we get a chance to do it again.
Yeah. Just any parting words that you want to send off on us? We've got your affirmations. Let's just reiterate here. The affirmations that we had up here, Dave, was I'm putting them as I am or I statements of I make things better, and from Kathy that I show up, and that we can all kind of take those into consideration this week.
I think my
That's
closing
perfect.
Came, yeah, my closing comes from a fellow by the name of Jack Poulston, who I met back in the 70s. He was a blind electrician, and he told me three things that have kept me going for a very long time. He said, first, you got to make money for the man what hires you. Secondly, do something even if it's wrong. Third, be original, make a new mistake every day.
Beautiful.
Oh, hold on, please. So I am out of here. I've got my phone's ringing, and my ride is ready to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
Good talking to you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Kathy, any parting final words that you'd like to give us here?
Share your gifts. I really meant that thing I said about you got two hands, one to reach out and help and one to reach out and be helped. No matter who you are, you have things to share. And show up and share.
Beautiful. Okay.
Thanks
well, thank
for
you
this
very
opportunity
much.
To visit.
Thank you. And, you know, I don't know if you can get over to the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations Facebook group. Actually, I think we put you in there last week or 2 weeks ago when we were looking at this. The show description is pinned to the top right now for this week in case there's any questions that people show up. If I do see something, I'll try to tag it so that you know that it's in there. It's not often that we
that
do
would
it.
Be...
We do with people listen to the archives.
That would be helpful if you tag me because I'm not in the fast lane on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I do listen to people's posts.
We'll find a way to, if people have questions to get that to you or to Dave or whatever on it. Even if I have to throw it in an email and then post it or something, we'll see how that. They say sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, you know. Folks, please feel free to share this show with anyone that you think might benefit from it. And you know what? Even those that you don't think will benefit from it, share it anyway. The archived link is at the same one that the original show was. So you can find that on Purpose Talk Radio. On Facebook, you can find it on the show page. It's all over the place. Or send me an email at cindy@purposetalkradio.com, and I'd be happy to get that to you. Cool. Well, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it. I'm going to round out this show. And
thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a great day. Okay, folks, our guests today were Catherine Schneider, and Dave Hyde. They were talking about seeing through different eyes from the perspective of blindness and other disabilities. You know, the big thing that I really wanted, I was going to try not to focus on the blindness per se, because for most blind and visually impaired people, it's not the disability that some people think it is, because they've come to adapt their life the way it needs to be for them. Is it a disadvantage in some cases? Sure it is. You've heard me talk about it over the years too. Do I need accommodations for school? Yes. Or do I accept accommodations from school? Let's try that a different way. Yes. Do I need them? They are much appreciated. They put me on the same playing field with my peers, you know, that I get extra time to be able to read the tests, that, I have someone that if there's an issue in the library and hard for me to read through things and find what I need, that someone can help me with that. You know, some people have a dog and a cane to travel and get from point A to point B, as Kathy and Dave were talking about. You know, there's a lot of other things. You know, Renee came on and talked about her you know, being line and visually impaired for the last dozen or so years and having a dog to guide her as well. And just people being kind to one another. That's all this is about. It's not about pushing right, wrong, or anything else on anybody. It's about just being kind. When you see someone that's different from you, no matter what that might mean, you know, ask if they need help. Accept their answer. Don't push it. You know, that's even for somebody, you know, you're opening a door for someone. You know, just be kind and say what you, you know, I've held the door for you. You know, whether someone is visually impaired or not, that's kind of a nice thing to say. Because then somebody knows the door is going to stay open and not slam it for another face. I've more times than I can count. You know, somebody's rushing through the door and I'm thinking it's going to stay open. And next thing I know, I'm, you know, have to reach for the handle because it closes in front of me. It's got nothing to do with blind or sighted. It just has to do with kindness. So that's what this is all about. Look at your world from the perspective of other people. See the world through different eyes when you go out into it. That's what Purpose Talk Radio is about. On a weekly basis, we do share people who are living their purpose, whatever that might mean. Again, from you know, the snow shoveler out there, as I look out the window and see it, the tree cutters, the whatever, to the CEO, CFO of a billion-dollar company. It really doesn't matter. You are living your purpose when you're doing what you like doing. If you are someone or know someone who would be a great guest on this show, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email at Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at purposetalkradio.com, P-U-R-P-O-S-E-T-A-L-K-R-A-D-I-O.com. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, hey, I'd love it. We can pick the topic. We can chat, as you hear. You know, this is just a laid-back, wonderful way of sharing with the community. If you have products or services, same thing. Let us know. I don't have a guest for next week. It is Christmas week. This week is Hanukkah for folks. I wish whoever and however you celebrate that you do so safely, you travel safely. If you need travel accommodations, please do get a hold of me for at truevisionstravel.com, T-R-U-E-V-I-S-I-O-N-S. T-R-A-V-E-L at gmail.com, or go to the website truevisionstravel.com and we can talk about travel arrangements if you still need something for your holidays, your new year, or even your spring break coming up, or whatever that might be. The theme song of Purpose Talk Radio is called I Am Who I Am. It is by the group True Trinity. That is the vocalist being Jillian Clark. The writers on that, Jillian, Rachel Grace, and myself, and their website is truetrinity.com. I think that's pretty much all I have to say for you folks this week. You know, I am very grateful to all those who listen. Please do, again, share this show if you'd like at the various, with the link. I'm kind of just glancing through our chat room and their phones and seeing if anybody has anything else to do. Renee, if there's anything else you want to add, press 1 to get off the queue and then come back in it. Otherwise, anybody else, one last shot, 347-205-9074, 347-205-9074. And so at this point, I'm going to wish you all again happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, happy New Year. We may have some shows in between here. And into the new year. I just don't have guests scheduled at this point, so we'll see how that all works. So until next week, I wish you all that you do live your purpose, and I wish you soul blessings. Have a great day, and thanks for listening.
I am me. I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.